Good morning. This is probably going to be a little bit different type of a presentation. When I got a call from Ray Acevedo about doing this, he said there's lots of new programs and lots of new people coming into this area, and we need to try to think about how do you go about doing some of these things. And I think one of the reasons Ray called me because he knew that, well, one thing, he was my graduate student. So we had been in the mentoring business with him for about nearly a decade, back to when he was dropped out of college, actually. And I've had like 45 grad students, I guess, in my career over the years. So it's something that's been very important to me. Another aspect of it was that I'd been department head for about 8 or 9 years, and I'd worked getting young people through the promotion and tenure process. And had to make some pretty hard decisions along that line with that, too, because they didn't all make it. And there's no bigger waste of capital, both dollars and human, than somebody that doesn't make tenure. And it's usually, you can point a finger at a boss because he made either a bad hiring decision or he didn't do a good job of communicating. And so that, keep that in the back of your mind, the young folks back here. So let's just go through this very quickly. I'm going to focus primarily on people going into the land-grant university system or government agencies like ARS, but a lot of the things I'm going to say are very applicable to people going into industry also, because the rules are basically the same. So don't think I'm just talking about land-grants. We're going to focus primarily on ideas for people starting a new position. And that new position doesn't necessarily mean it's an early career person or a grad student that should be paying attention. I last started a new position 2 years ago. I'm a farmer, okay? Whole different rules. The profitability part's a whole lot more important than it used to be. But in the academia, I last started a new position at the age of 58. Okay, I stepped down from administration, went back to a faculty position for 10 years in precision ag, focusing on sensors, primarily in algorithms for nutrient applications. So it can go across a broad area. As you've already heard from Dave and from Newell, precision ag is a lot of things, and it really is. So you have to think a little bit about, there's so many different skills and so many different products that come out of this. What are ones that really might make an impact in your particular area? And you don't really know that unless you get out and talk to a lot of people. And the other aspect of it is the rules are a lot different today starting a program than they were 40 years ago when I started a program. Because all organizations tend to be run in a lot leaner, meaner way today than they were when I started. And money's a little tighter, there's fewer people, you're asked to do a lot more things, and you have to make a lot more decisions on what really you need to focus on to be successful. Talk a little bit about the whole idea of evaluation. I think I'm a baseball fan, okay? And I'm a Chicago Cubs fan. Formerly long-suffering, but of course after this last Dodger series, I'm still long-suffering. But one of the interesting things that came out watching the baseball playoffs this year was how many times the announcers talked about a bad call or a bad play or whatever, but somebody tweets in with the specific rule. I saw this 3 or 4 times on television where they would show a tweet where somebody came in and said, well, on rule 6.315, they made exactly the right call. There was a block at the plate. There was a foul tip that wasn't, that was totally mishandled. So the first thing you need to do when you start some of these new jobs is get a hold of the rule book and read it. and find out what really the rules say about how these things work, what you can and what you can't do. And that's really an important point. The other thing is find out who's the ump. Who's actually going to do the evaluations? And generally in most universities and most organizations, there's the different layers of evaluation. Annual evaluation for salaries is at the universities a lot of time is done by department heads in conjunction with approval from a dean and director. Our ARS system works kind of the same way. You've got a local location leader who makes a recommendation. It goes up to an area director or something before some of that's done. So the key is, who are these people and what do they really expect? Because what you're going to find is expectations aren't always what you think they are. The systems that I came up through at LSU, Purdue, and Kansas State were all very different. In the old days at LSU, it was simply my boss decided I needed a raise and he gave me one. There was no formal evaluation documents, no interviews, and when promotion and tenure came along, it was almost the same thing. When I go to Purdue, there's an annual report that's required for the department head. There's a tenure document that's required. I was hired in February, and in October I had to turn in a tenure document. Not a whole lot of time to get a whole lot put together, but then I turned a new one in every year until it got until it was taken care of to the point where it went through the system, and it was reviewed by a lot of different people. All the professors and all the tenured professors had input, and at that time there was like 56 tenured faculty in agronomy at Purdue, three members of the National Academy, and I'm an extension guy. With a research appointment, which was new because when I was at LSU, it was just research. But hidden in the unwritten rules that you discover as you go through the process of talking to some of these people is there's expectations that aren't written down. They weren't on your job description. They weren't discussed during the interview when you were hired. And they may never be discussed because they're not part of the written rules. So you need to understand that. You need to talk to the people that are actually going to be involved in that evaluation and see what they really expect. It became very clear to me when I was first hired at Purdue, even though I had a 70% or 80% extension appointment, that about half the people on the committee that was going to make the initial vote was going to expect referee journal articles out of my program. And at the next level, which at Purdue it was populated by faculty. Department heads didn't have an input. It was just faculty, tenured faculty within the College of Ag. 80% of the people on the committee were primary research appointments. So they had those expectations too. I probably wouldn't have known that very quickly if I hadn't gone around and talked to some individual people in the department who had served on that college-wide committee who could give me the straight stuff about what was actually going to be required. And so that was it was fortunate I did that because I was able to probably cut off a couple years of that process. And so that was good. And again, wasting time is very expensive, and you don't want to do that. So how do you go through all this and then balance that with family inputs? At the time I was going through the tenure process, I had two young kids. And it did put a little crunch on things, particularly being in extension and traveling all the time, particularly in the winter meetings time frame. But you're able to do it if you make it a priority. And I think all of us should do some of that, whatever that may be. Are there particular products that are especially important to that evaluation? I already mentioned the idea of journal articles. At K-State and Extension, when I first went there, one of the number one things that was required was Extension meetings. And there was a fine line because there were people that were, I won't say punished, but it was looked on pretty unfavorably if they had too many. because they didn't do enough of the other things. They were too busy running around the countryside, had too much windshield time. And so that's an important thing to think about, too. What is the balance you need? Is it referee journals? Is it extension publications? I went through two cycles where extension publications were disregarded as important. I had one dean that told me, I get tired of recycling extension publications. We print 5,000 and we recycle 4,900. We're not going to do those anymore. So how are we going to do it different? So you got to stay on top of things like that, and also you got to be creative and figure out how to make that work. So there's various different things that you have to look at. What do they really want? Because it isn't always what you think, and you may get mixed signals. So you need to make sure you understand who's making the decision, so you can pay attention to that mixed signal and sort of filter some of that through. Probably one of my biggest disappointments as an apartment head was I hired a young man, and he didn't listen to me. He listened to the state extension leader and some of the lead specialists that he dealt with, who didn't understand the system because they were 20 years past the point where tenure was important. And consequently, he, even though I sent him a letter once a year, and we had a review session for about an hour, and I talked to him quite a bit, he kind of disregarded it because he was told to disregard it because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. He didn't make tenure. Now, fortunately, he landed on his feet, went to another system, and built on that experience and has done very, very well. And I'm very pleased. I talked to him just yesterday, and he's doing great, and that makes me feel a whole lot better. But again, it's an important issue that you have to think about. Is there a particular area of research that is a critical, and who's your clientele? I think that's an important part too. We've gone through various cycles at the land grant system. Clientele for an extension specialist, for example, at one point was the county agents. You did everything through the county agents. And if you didn't focus on them first, you paid a price. Then we went the other way, where in some states, they even did away with the county agents, pretty much. And some of those that brought them back, they said, because they learned from their mistakes. But you have to understand who that clientele is. Is it farmers? Is it industry? Is it county extension level or what? And that's one of the most critical aspects of it. And what's the technology? I mean, you talk to people who aren't really involved in extension or in precision ag, and they may think of there's just one or two key things. It may be drones, it may be statistics, it may be big data, whatever that may be. But that may not be what your clientele wants. You know, it might not really be thought about as the easy button. And developing systems that are very simple might be, you know, they're not sexy. And then the other aspect of it is you got to also mesh that with where's grant money coming from? Because nobody's going to hand you a big pot of money to build a program. Or if they do, it's not going to last more than 1 or 2 years. So you've got some things that you have to really think about. And I guess the probably most important thing, is it going to be fun? Is it going to be something you really enjoy? And I think sometimes you have to balance your program, and it has to be multi-focused. You should probably, you know, you got to focus on what you're hired to do to be successful in the system, but you ought to have some other things that you're doing that you enjoy, and it doesn't hurt to have some sort of wild hairs that you've got out there on some crazy ideas that may or may not work. You don't put a lot of capital into that bucket, but you know, that's what's going to make a difference sometimes as we go through this stuff. Build a support team. The key word I heard in both Dave and Newell's presentation was integration. We are now integrators, basically, and Precision Ag is the ultimate integrating system. We're trying to take all these things and put them together, which means that honestly, you got to work in a team. because we don't have, none of us are bright enough to have all the skills that are going to be required to understand evaluating herbicide effectiveness or carryover effects on crops, soil testing procedures, yield monitors, selecting hybrids, environmental quality, soil health. You just go through the list of things. But if you can find some like-thinking colleagues, whether they're at the university or in industry or a good farmer, crop consultant, and you can build that team to integrate and work together, it'll multiply the effects unbelievable. And I think that's really a key point. There's other opportunities that you can get involved in. Excuse me. One of the things that was very helpful for me was working on regional committees. There's been some information groups that are out there that work on things all the time, and they really do help you think about things a little bit differently. Get away for a couple days and annual meeting and listen to what some other people are doing and have some of those conversations over a beer and talk about different ideas, different wild hairs that other people have. It's really very valuable. Informal research groups. When I started back in you know, I came out of the dark of administration and went into the enlightenment of science again. There was a optical sensing group, an informal group that Bill Ron and Newell and some other people were very involved in, and I pushed my way into that. And it was very, very helpful to me. I went down and visited Bill Ron, spent a couple of days down at Oklahoma State. He gave me a green seeker to work with. He gave me a graduate student to work with, actually. I took one of his, who was just finishing his master's and brought Kent up to K-State. But those kind of interactions can be very helpful and really important. In Kansas, we have different clientele groups, and there's one at Kansas Ag Research Association, which is focused primarily on tillage and precision ag. And those guys are, boy, you talk about a bunch of guys way out in front. And that's the way it really works with. And then industry people, I've always had good luck sorting out, finding somebody in industry. If I was working on nitrification inhibitors, it was with Dow. If I was working on precision ag, it might have been with Trimble or whatever. So, last point, listen to the non-believers. That's sometimes not fun. You know, some of them do really honestly believe the earth is flat. But some of them also have some valid reasons why they're non-believers. And if you listen to them a little bit, you can come up with some research ideas to see if, you know, not necessarily to test if their hypothesis is correct, but to figure out ways to maybe satisfy some of their concerns and make a difference. And then last thing, always ask questions. So I'm no longer actively working. I'm farming now. but there's my contact information. The best way is by email. I'd be more than happy to answer any additional questions you have. Thank you very much.